Hello, welcome to Weekly Wings, your go-to podcast from DroneLife.com, where we soar through the latest in drone technology, regulations, exciting innovations. Each week, join Samuel, Terry, and I as we navigate the drone industry, offering expert insights, interviews with key figures, and a bird's eye view of how drones are shaping our world. From commercial applications to recreational adventures, Weekly Wings dives into how these remarkable vehicles are impacting construction, education, agriculture, delivery services, and much more. Whether you're a professional drone operator, a hobbyist, or just drone curious, tune in to stay informed and inspired as we explore the heights of what's possible in the world of drones. Subscribe now and never miss an episode of Weekly Wings, where the future is looking up. Welcome, everybody, to our seventh episode of Weekly Wings. Another great week in the industry of drones. Just another great week in the world, right? We've got sporting events, talked about soccer and stuff, just always great things happening in the state of North Carolina. U.S. Open, 124th U.S. Open is currently taking place in Pinehurst, driving lots of folks here. If you've tuned in, you could see right in the practice rounds, the drone video is out there. Golf course, big area, lots to see, lots of beauty. The drones are out there flying. So just really, really exciting. One other sports thing I wanted to say is just for the folks that are UFC, Conor McGregor, I don't know, Terry. This is poor Michael Chandler, man. Dude should have been like 3 years ago, just waiting on someone that he's gonna fight a ghost, man.
Yeah, he'll be all right. He'll be all right. We do need to send him a wellness check eventually, though.
Yeah. I loved how they're using the laugh, like the Conor McGregor laugh, for the past month. You know,
this is just mind games from Conor, honestly. So.
And from Dana White's perspective, I'm like, he probably just wants to be like, you know, just get out of here. But when the dude has sold four of the five highest gates, it's not just about the fight itself as much of an awareness to the sport. So I'm like, he probably just wants to tell the guy to get lost. But I don't know. It'll be interesting to see what happens. Certainly disappointed. But should be some good fights going on end of the month anyway. With that said, how's it going? What's going on, Samuel? How you doing?
Doing well. It's pretty hot. So overall doing well, but I can definitely feel it a little bit today. That's North Carolina for you in the summer, though, you know. Drone gigs pick up, but it's definitely hot.
Yeah. And then we think that December could never exist because I'm like talking about cold weather and, hey, it was good. It's good for outdoor sports. You don't have to cancel that. The soccer tournament last week, golf this week. If you're UFC, it doesn't really matter because we're inside. You just need people to show up. So with that, you know, going to just dive into, we're going to welcome everybody. Appreciate you tuning in, listening. Hope you all had a great week as well. And are following along with what's going on in the industry. If you're not, we've got a few cool, neat things here that we're going to discuss. With the first thing that we're going to talk about is a very, very old tree.
Exceptionally old at that.
Yes, the General Sherman tree. Groundbreaking drone inspection conducted on General Sherman tree. Pioneering use of industrial-grade drone provides comprehensive health assessment of the world's largest known living tree. And when I read this, I was just like, you know, it's just like if the drone aspect of checking the tree and that the tree's named, if that's not enough, and then you're like the world's largest known living tree. Like there could be a bigger tree out there that's unknown at this point. We should go find it, but the world's largest known living tree, a giant sequoia in Sequoia National Park, named after General Sherman. What do you guys think about this?
Just kind of looking at the article, it's really cool because the volunteers started to climb the tree and then there's like, you know, this is a lot of tree. And then the human ingenuity comes in with the drone and kind of makes the job so much easier with that. But Sorry, I think I talked over you a little bit, Terry.
No, you're good. I didn't talk.
Yeah, in the video we got up here right now, folks watching on YouTube are getting to see this video. Anyone tuning in, audio only. You know, what's behind this is Doodle Labs, from a software standpoint, hardware softwares, working closely with a UAS manufacturer. And so a big piece of this flight and operation is that this is a just massive tree. The drone being used, right? We're in a national forest here. You know, government land. Well, the drone is NDAA compliant, and the drone is on the blue UAS list. So for those individuals that have to adhere to those strict security requirements and, you know, the provisions that come along with government purchasing, this vehicle that you're looking at, it's a quadcopter. You know, it's built and it does things that we'll talk about later, the ban, the Chinese drones, that those vehicles now. But look right here, like, look at the amount of cases, and he's got a screwdriver out, and like, shout out to Matt Eisenbarger, you know, being on here. But when you look at this at the end of the day, it's, you know, we need to scale this. The industry needs a lot of these. Here's the Doodle Lab remote. Here's it taking off. You've got LiDAR that you can put on it. So there is a piece here where it's like, hey, we're doing this, maybe not necessarily because the tree needs it, because we can get in there and, you know, physically see what's going on when it comes to the beetles, you know, but to be able to say that we took this drone that's blue and NDAA compliant and then share this message, it's right in line with what everybody's talking about right now.
I think notably too, this is this was conducted for just kind of a yearly health checkup on the tree to assess its condition. Fun facts, 275 feet high. That's over like almost half the limit for flying, you know, and then 2,200 years old. And now it has, I don't know, it's kind of crazy. That is an insane lifetime, you know?
But that tree was there before Jesus.
Right, that's insane. Right, isn't that how...
And then you can see, like, Free Flies, Astro Prime drone, state-of-the-art, NDAA compliant, and blue SUAS approved.
It's a mouthful.
So the Free Fly, and it's using Doodle Labs software. For flight control and C2. So when you see this now, the video on here, this, the size of it, as these people scale this tree, like Samuel said, 275 feet. Do you guys think that this would possibly make someone be able to find like a bigger tree? Cause they said like, this is the largest known tree. And,
probably not. I know the Amazon rainforest hasn't been fully just like explored, but I don't think their trees get that tall. So the redwoods are kind of in their league of their own when it comes to trees.
But like, if you're in Sequoia though, is there a bigger tree than this? And this just happens to be the one someone saw and they put a path around because it was easy to access. It was easily accessible. Whereas there could be another tree like 15 miles away and just like no one's ever measured it or really looked at it. I don't know. Maybe I should go out there.
Yeah. I mean,
next week,
mapping,
tree hunting,
mapping software on your drone.
Yeah. We're doing our next week's episode is going to be from Sequoia National Park.
That would be kind of sick.
Just get some LiDAR, start mapping the entire forest. Can't do that. Sorry.
And then the aspect too here, we're like, oh, we're using a, you know, an NDAA compliant blue drone. You know, the whole video here, it's at the end, Doodle Labs is presenting this, but it's like, okay, this tree that's in a publicly known location and readily accessible in the fact that you could go visit it. What's, is there a threat that someone's going to look at the pictures of the Beatles that they took, as opposed to we're flying a blue NDAA secure drone over here near a military installation where you actually have like a asset that is sensitive. I'm just not sure where people would like classify the Sherman tree in, you know.
What, in terms of a
top secret?
Yeah.
Security threat. If someone got their hands on one of those photos of the Beatles on the tree, would that pose a threat to American citizens?
I mean, is it purely kind of the photos that people were worried about, or the data overall?
If someone could tap in and steal the photo and the videos of that tree, would it pose a threat to America's national security? Could someone take that and plan like another September 11th? Could somebody take that and access secure files?
It's what they're not telling us what's inside the tree, Paul. That's the big thing there. There's a secret weapon.
It's actually a nuke.
The Beetle is I'm going to have to go back and watch that video again and try to find the thing that they were actually looking for, because the Beetle was just a front, right?
Honestly, like, I was a little distracted because of the height. Like, that tree is so massive, it just kind of dwarfs, even with those tall trees around it, it's still kind of, it gives you a really good perspective of just how tall that tree is. Dizzyingly high. But, yeah.
It's actually now of, like, trying to look. Let's see. Let's bring this up for comparison.
What's the main ape's name from Planet of the Apes?
Caesar.
Does anybody know that off the top of their head? Caesar? That's Caesar's house.
Actually, Terry, I don't know if you watched the recent trilogy of the new Planet of the Apes movies, but I recall part of it taking place in the Redwoods in the Sequoia Forest. So I think you're
watch the recent one.
Okay.
So you got almost 2,000 sequoia trees in Sequoia National Park. And it looks like in 2001, some of these forest fires that happened out there threatened this tree. So they wrapped the tree several times with aluminum foil.
That's impressive.
And that looks like some like massive aluminum foil sheets. That does not look like wood.
That's some like aluminum NASA foil solar for storm
fixing
weather.
The space station.
Yeah, so exactly.
Like we need to patch the space station. Get the foil.
Notably, this is the first time I can account for a drone legally flying in a national park. I feel like you might have.
Oh
more
no, no.
With this.
It's definitely happened before. From them collecting their own imagery and then parks are always, you're always wanting to promote it National Geographic Channel, the History Channel, you know, whenever they've done kind of like documentaries and stuff, there's definitely been folks putting up like Phantom Threes years and years ago in national parks. Here's a great image right here that just shows kind of in reference the height of that great General Sherman sequoia tree. Almost as tall as the Statue of Liberty.
That's insane.
Threatened by wildfires.
Do they have an estimated lifetime for those trees? I feel like with it being so old, I don't even know how you would expect its lifetime, you know?
I bet he's
like, when does it
out
stop?
Right now.
What's that, Terry?
have they found ones that were like fallen and they've been able to study them and determine like, you know, based on the number of rings on this fallen tree, it lived to be this old.
Yeah.
I faintly remember seeing something about the world's largest like plant. It was some type of root, but it like spanned the entire West Coast. Just one like root system.
I don't know. Yeah. In that forest. That's like the forest where those people go. I'm pretty sure the death forest.
The Bohemian Grove. Is that what you're talking
about? The Suicide Forest in Japan?
Is that? I think.
Well, that's a thing. I didn't know if that's what you were. Okay.
There's something like that where everything's connected, right? Everything in the whole thing is sharing the same entire root system.
I think it goes up into Canada a little bit too.
3,000 years. Giant sequoia trees can live to be over 3,000 years old. In fact, one giant sequoia was found to be 3,210 years old. And some of the larger trees may be even older. So right, when you look at this whole video, they didn't say it was the oldest, right? It was the largest. So the General Sherman tree is the largest known living tree. It's not the oldest. So
that
I guess
also means it's not done.
If you want, like, unless you're Terry, you know, you definitely just judged it off of like one video. Yeah, he didn't even get to see the whole analysis of the LIDAR, and he just said it looks like it's on its way out.
Hey, I never said that. I'm just saying he's probably maxing his time, okay?
Yeah, well, not really, because if it's 2,000 years old, it's just hitting its stride, Terry. The General Sherman tree it's past that. It's hitting its stride. It's like just got its kids out of the house. It's ready to get back into action.
Crisis.
I want to see what it buys during its midlife crisis. What's it going to do?
That's what the wildfires are.
The wildfire might have been that crisis. You know, you might come there one day, just gone. The foil, all that foil on it, it had no idea what to do. It was very, very. It went through a difficult time, but 3,000 years old, and it says in the Converse Basin Grove of the national park, they found a specimen that was 3,266 years old. So I wonder if, like, you know, maybe 1,000 years ago, that tree was the biggest one, but just like, you know, it, as it got older, maybe it just kind of like shrunk a little.
Hmm.
We'll find out. We'll have to keep up with them.
Check in another year, see if they, I'm curious if that's.
And I looked it up, and I
was going to say, I'm curious if they're pretty happy with the results of the drone. Like, it seems like that was incredibly beneficial, being able to just throw a drone up. I mean, there's no
risk
of human when you're just throwing a drone up as opposed to someone climbing up that bad boy. Especially if you're climbing, I think you could potentially harm it. I mean, not extensively, but.
And I also, I hear that, but I also do feel like we have to at least just bring this guy up once. For folks that are viewing, so that everyone can see this just warrior face of William Tecumseh Sherman, because my first thought here was like, oh my gosh, is the name of the tree going to change? Like, that's just what I was thinking. So I was like, oh, let me look up, you know, who this guy was. And, Union Army General, scorched earth policy, right? So the dude just laid waste and just kept it moving. Recognized by, you know, a British theorist historian as, you know, the most original genius of the American Civil War and the first modern general. So William Tecumseh Sherman helping lead the Union Army in the Civil War and keeping these great states together. And very interesting. Really interesting article, right? In the sense of it just has the nature aspect, the fact that it's environmental based. You got the history of the individual who it's named after, which brings, you know, a lot of American history into it. You're using aviation technology. Disruptive technology, drones, LIDAR, and it's an aviation asset. And then you bring in that technological aspect of, you know, it's LIDAR. It's not just your standard video and photo that we've seen. And then the security aspect that you lay on, because it's a American-made drone. It's NDAA compliant. It's Blue UAS. And so it's also hitting like that political aspect. So I really did think, you know, for this week that actually kind of was just a really neat featured story to have. So you guys got any last thoughts on the old great Sequoia?
I'm going to have to get out there and see it for myself one day.
Yeah, we'll plan a weekend trip, Samuel. No worries.
One quick weekend trip to the West Coast.
California.
Yeah. And I completely agree that, now as you learn more, you're like, you know what? That is a pretty significant thing to look up and be like, wow, that tree's 2,200 years old. That's pretty cool. Pretty cool. So moving into our next topic here, Terry, I'm just going to go ahead and let you, introduce this. I'm going to share my screen, but, tell us what are we looking at here and how many should we buy?
All right. So before I start talking about it, I would like to say that I am not anti-drone. I just like all things that involve drones. So that includes dismantling drones, unfortunately. So what we got here is we have a shotgun shell filled with almost like a parachute slug. So basically there are multiple kind of wires connected to weights at the end. It shoots it out the barrel and it expands and gets that bad boy out of the air. I'm not exactly sure how far it expands.
Hey guys,
like 2 feet. God. Jesus, Luke, calm down.
And it looks so Terry, was like, all right, let's take a look. This is not even, I thought this was a video.
I don't think they're going to be shooting $600 drones. I don't think that's that type of company.
We need to see a video.
This is not,
it shows the wingspan of it somewhere. I remember seeing the wingspan of it. You might have to scroll down on it. Oh, it's on the packaging.
You know what? We're finding something. We're finding there's no video of it. So what I'm saying is we have to make a video of it.
All right. Yeah. So, Paul, you're going to get one of your drones out of your arsenal. I'll buy the shotgun shells.
I got the camera.
Yo. let's... let's do it. We could get there's like $60 drones on Amazon. We could just throw up we should totally do it. It called? Skynet drone defense. There has to be a video. There's no way someone didn't shoot. Yeah, there's like a 14.
Now I would say from a price standpoint, these are pretty expensive. It's a three pack costs $36. If you're really in a pinch and you need to get that drone down, I'm sure birdshot or even a wide expanding buckshot would work. Or if you're a good shot, get some flight forward.
And this guy's unsponsored too, and he's going to shoot a drone.
Unsponsored.
This is us next week.
He's weighing it, going all out here. Look at this. We got
these are good
the
stats.
Approximate distance. They have definitely. Look at this easy. Oh my goodness! Get out of here. Easy shot, marksman, above average, expert. Good luck, all luck. If the drone's moving 40 miles an hour and it's 300 feet away, you need all luck to hit it. This is hilarious.
Wow, that's a very in-depth card they give you too.
That is. Significant breakdown.
Is this Skynet part of the
bullet
unboxing
speed
video?
Is moving at 1,000 feet per second. Yeah. look, we're even getting like.
It drops. It drops very steeply, it looks like.
Yeah, see what they're shooting down, though? He's got like pens.
What is that?
It's just a homemade. It's just like a homemade.
It's not even flying. They put it on a stick.
Oh, my goodness.
They have the heart, though,
this
right?
This is terrible.
The heart's in it.
And then they're just shooting a drone that's not flying?
Yeah.
It actually doesn't look like it would destroy a drone. It just kind of wraps it. I'm sure if the weights hit it,
well, the whole
idea to it.
The whole idea, right, is that you're shooting it out so that it gets into the, right, like caught up in the propeller blades. It gets and then causes, like if you can just get one prop blade to get hung up and freeze up that one motor, you're going to take down any quadcopter. It's just not going to be able to sustain flight. So I think it's not that it's going to like take it down. It's going to wrap up those props and it's going to prevent it from flight. That's that is interesting though. I would be anxious to see if he lost his drone for science. I just bringing this back up. These guys like I'm getting clickbaited or whatever. I don't know what the hell that was. So yeah, a little crappy Phantom here. Dude's in Texas, man. They'll shoot things down in Texas. Yeah, I mean, they don't care. They're going to shoot it down. Did he shoot it? All right, here we go. Oh, he missed.
God, what a terrible shot, man.
Oh, just missed. He's like,
they're shooting directly towards power lines, by the way. I would like to point that out.
He's like, you got to get, yeah. You got to get closer. That is funny. It's going to end up like shoes, like a pair of shoes. I mean, at this point, just throw shoes at it. They're literally, it's like hanging. That'd be hilarious if the thing was just dangling. And so for the folks on the audio only here, where the video that's pulled up is like, at this point, the dude is directly below the drone. His gun's pointed straight in the air, shotgun straight up, and he hits it. And at that point, it's like he almost hit himself with the drone.
Yeah, I see. Now this makes me think, like, how accurate is it for drones flying by? Like, would you be better off just getting some bird shot or something if it's somewhat close, and then some wider expanding buckshot, and just pray you hit it?
Yeah, because at the end of the day, you just hit one prop. If one projectile hits one prop and busts it, then it's gonna. But then it's all about the fodder. It's like, you're shooting up in the sky, and then what goes up must come down. The idea of like that yarn and net coming down is, I don't know, like the risk to the people on the ground, like what you're shooting toward. Clearly these people are, you know, somewhere in Texas. Yeah, like I don't know. It's kind of weird though, because it's like, is there, what is on? It looks like there's some pretty heavy, I don't know, bearings or something on there.
Yeah, it's like fish weights, it looks like. I'm sure there's a better way to do this. Now, I'm not going to make it, but I'm sure something will come out eventually.
And so it's hilarious, though, because once you watch this video, now you go back and you look at that sheet where it was like, if the drone's going 20, he couldn't hit the drone and it was hovering.
Yeah. He had to go stand right underneath. Under? Is that good luck?
What he just did, or...
Yeah, would you say that's a good luck shot, a marksman shot, or what? According to their little chart.
At the bottom, what he just shot was like, for sure, that was like a, you can't miss. But even where it was like, even where he was in a green area, he completely missed it. Hmm. So I think the name Skynet, like you think Skynet and, you know, drone defense, and it makes you, that's what I think. I'm like, you know, it's kind of like a play on, you know, drones are going to take over. And what are you going to do when a rogue drone comes to your house? And literally now the company's making a drone called Rogue that has a warhead. You know, we had it on episode 2, I think. The Rogue drone. So it's like, how do you stop that? And the whole idea here is, this is cute for an individual person, but when you are a secure environment, you're using technology to detect aircraft before you can
lasers
see them almost. But this is neat. It's kind of a cool thing here, but after watching the video, that it really makes sense. The whole paper that they came up with, because it's kind of a little bit of a joke, you know.
Don't like, be a victim.
if you're trying to shoot a drone going 40, it just, the Skynet or even any weapon system is, you know, your standard weapons, you're gonna be able to shoot a drone going 40 down, fly a drone past going 40 miles an hour, and just, you know, it's cruising. So
out of curiosity, let's see how much the 10,000 pet cost.
All right, here.
Just $118,000. That's nothing.
Wow. And shipping calculated. ABC. The supplier is ABC.
Yeah, I don't think Maverick Drone Systems actually makes these. I think they just kind of sell products from different companies.
Yeah, a little reseller action. Air, land, and sea. All right, awesome. Cool stuff, Terry. That was pretty neat when I saw it. I just saw Skynet, and I was like, oh, this is going to be something.
I seen it on Twitter, and I was like, all right, this is somewhat relevant, you know?
I was like, this is definitely going to be interesting. So tech side, on the technology side, and kind of like a product thing here going along with, there's a little theme here that I just wanted to make sure to highlight. But DroneLife.com and others, you know, announced this past week, earlier this week, Teledyne FLIR last week introduces a Hadron 640 series thermal sensor. So, you know, people are familiar with FLIR, like, oh, FLIR thermal camera, and FLIR and Teledyne, right, came together. And they're manufacturing a drone, like an actual drone, NDAA compliant drone that has thermal capabilities, zoom capabilities. It's priced around $10,000. But what they also do is they manufacture the sensors. So there are companies in DJI, when DJI started and introduced thermal, they were actually using FLIR thermal sensors in their DJI drones. But what DJI did is they, you know, learned, a company over there, DJI themselves, they learned the ways to develop and make their own thermal cores. So now DJI drones no longer have FLIR sensors. And FLIR definitely built up a lot of business because DJI sells a lot of drones. And then all of a sudden, they weren't buying FLIR's product anymore. So if you build up a company and you have sales and then those sales stop, what do? You pivot, you shut down, you make adjustments. And what FLIR, you know, was kind of able to do and was doing in other products is they were just integrating their own thermal core into the solution. So they said, well, you know, instead of just giving DJI the core and then they build it into their payload and they make it on their drone, they started making like their own payloads that companies could buy and put on their drone. So you can see next to a quarter, folks on audio are looking at this image here. It's a quarter next to this camera, and the camera is like two and a half quarters tall.
Easily so, fits in the palm of your hand.
Right, easily fits in the palm of your hand. So it's like the exact size of like a Mavic 3 thermal payload, a Mavic 2 Enterprise thermal payload. And so companies can, it's plug and play, a drone manufacturer. And the company mentioned here in the article, it was Teal Drones. So Teal is one of those companies that's trying to manufacture a U.S. drone in the United States that can compete with a DJI product, at least at the military side of things. So now Teal, and Teal has been integrating the FLIR, you know, sensors, I think from very early on, is Teal can just focus on building the drone and the motors and the flight software, and then they can just take this sensor and just plug it in to their stack, right? They've got their drone, put it on a gimbal, plug it in, and you're good to go. You don't have to worry about engineering or designing that thermal camera. And again, it goes back to this idea of Teal Drones isn't going to buy a Chinese sensor because they sell drones to the military. So they have to be able to support NATO allies in the United States Army's short-range reconnaissance Trance 2. So you have to, again, if you're free fly, right? The drone we looked at before. Hey, you want a quick thermal? This is something that you could integrate. So it's not the drone itself, but it's the technology that has enabled drones to do really, really significant things in law enforcement, public safety, search and rescue, facilities management. And to this be bumped up 640 thermal, you've got a 64 megapixel.
I do believe so. Yes.
Out of curiosity, 64 Paul, I feel like you would have some insight on this, but who do you think their primary audience for selling this camera kind of is to? Like who would be their prime audience for something like this?
So the Hadron 640, like this new Hadron sensor that we're looking at that's like the size of a quarter, is to companies that are trying to make a drone in the United States or for the United States that meets these NDAA requirements. So the country of origin, the ban, all this stuff that's being discussed. You can't just go buy the chips and sensors and cameras from China and then put them together in the United States. You have to buy products that are sourced from the US or from NATO approved ally countries. And FLIR has been known forever as just very high quality thermal, right? Forever. And that's why DJI started working with them. But they were probably charging DJI a significant amount of money for every sensor they sold them. And it got to the point where it's like, hey, Amazon effect.
You can kind of see the pricing on this thing. It's what, $3,872.
Yeah. Do you have, is that,
I went ahead and pulled up one of their,
on their page.
Yeah. Yeah. I was looking at the specs for it, but, it looks like that's a part of a kit.
Oh yeah.
Go ahead.
Oh yeah, this is for enterprise. This is to put on a drone that's going to cost minimum 10 grand.
Right. So this is like they have an audience lined up specifically, like, hey, this bill's coming up. We're going to prep. Seems like they know what they're doing with that.
Yeah. Thing. And so this right here is a video of Teal Drones. So Teal Drones, what I mentioned, the Teal 2 Red Cat company, they are a defense manufacturer. They sell the defense. So multi-vehicle control, right? This company Teal is making drones, but they're focused on all the other things. So they can just buy this camera for $3,000. But again, they're not buying one, right? Teal's not buying one drone. And by the way, George, Mateus, I think Miriam had mentioned in our first episode, this kid like started this company. See right there, Teledyne FLIR. You can see the camera integrated. He like started the company when he was in high school, I think. But it's huge play on marketing and advertising and like, you know, showing people what things could be and then seeing what, you know, what they really are. And then when you just look at where it is compared to the China stuff, we're behind. We're a little bit behind, but it's American. So yeah, this drone right here. And then there's, you know, other organizations. I'm trying to think, I just, from pulling off the top of my head, I can't even remember, but yeah, it's companies that are manufacturing like here in the US don't want to use Chinese product because of country of origin. And you're manufacturing drones that are, going to be $10, $12, $15, $20,000 where people expect high resolution thermal, high megapixel, you know, zoom capability, all that. So that's what they're doing. They're releasing that product. They're saying, hey, you build the drone, we'll make you the camera.
It gets insane performance for that footprint as well, I'd like to say. It's not very big. It packs a very big punch.
Yeah, for the weight and then the integration and then power consumption. Like, there's so many things, challenges to when you look at a drone. It's not just hardware. They've literally taken a phone, they've taken a camera, and they've found a way to make it fly, stabilize it, gets really smooth quality. So design and development of the payload itself, the camera, the payload, you got to consider, well, how much power is available, right? What's the power consumption going to be? What's the functionality? What's the weight? What's the, and they really have created like a plug and play sensor that checks a lot of boxes. It's not the cheapest, but at the end of the day, if you're going to start selling a lot of drones, your acquisition cost with FLIR is going to go down, right? The more units you buy, if you're going to make one drone, and that's the huge challenge for US manufacturers. Everybody has a great idea and can make a drone, but you can't create customers. How do you scale it? How do you make more? The more you can make, the less it costs. They're making EV cars in China for like $5,000, $10,000. You can buy an EV car in China for $10,000. That is
insane.
I've
been on a trip lately, so that's, to me, that's insane.
And you've got Bluetooth. That's not like crappy EV car. That's like a quality EV car, and the same quality product in the United States is $50,000. And so there's a huge ban on EV cars. Chinese manufacturers cannot import EV vehicles into the United States. You could call this protectionism, right? You can call it nationalism, patriotism, label it however you want. What it is GM, Ford, Chevy, you name the big US auto manufacturers, they're selling cars 5 times the price. The cost to do things here is outrageously high. The cost to get things there is a lot of layers to all this, but when you look at the auto industry, ask yourself, the American manufacturers might be charging, but they're successfully making cars and servicing them. So there's a shit ton of jobs, right, that exist backed by this industry from the dealership repair shops. Go to a Honda or Ford, go to that dealership and see not just how many people are selling stuff, how many people are working on and maintaining those cars? And those gas cars have a lot more maintenance requirements and things that EV cars don't. So there is, even if they hit a 200, like I read something that even if they tax Chinese EV cars 200%, you know, if they marked the price up 200% and import added a tariff when they came in, those cars would still be cheaper. They could tariff the crap out of these cars, but they would still be less expensive. And they're fighting tooth and nail, big auto, to keep it from coming in. And there's a lot of jobs that the auto industry creates. So I get it. But when you look at the drone industry, how many people are employed by this handful of American manufacturers? And how many people are going to profit off of a ban of DJI drones? A handful of high executives at an organization. Because at the end of the day in China, it's robots that are putting these drones together. It's not people. It's advanced automated manufacturing where a machine is putting a screw and it's going down a belt. And there might be a couple humans that just kind of put and puzzle piece bigger sections together. Yeah. I probably just went off on a bit of a tangent there. I think I swore for the first time. So welcome to Weekly Wings, DroneLife.com podcast. Really appreciate everybody who tunes in and listen. And just, you know, at the end of the day, this is not my life, but this is where I work and in this industry, and I stay very informed. Just today, I've had two conversations with people reaching out saying, this thing passed. It really looks like we're headed closer toward a ban of DJI drones. What should I do? I'm not going to be able to fly my drone. I'm like, guys, hang on to your drone because, and I'm asking these questions. And I'm like, maybe I'm missing something. Maybe I don't understand this, but if they ban DJI drones, all the police and we can just, you know, get into how public safety is against, I'm going to bring this up because this is part of the conversation. This is relevant. And we're going to get to the drone light show thing. Don't forget, folks, we have drone light show stuff. This wouldn't be Weekly Wings if we didn't talk about drone light shows. The first responders are opposing, right, inclusion of the Countering CCP Drones Act in the NDAA, in the National Defense Reauthorization Act, right? So, or Authorization Act. So what they're saying is this has now been taken and slid into a different thing. This is government, right? You take it, people don't like it, you hide it under something else that people do like. And when they did that, now it's like, oh, this is definitely going to happen because we know that the 2025 NDAA is going to go through. So everybody's now going, wow, this is, here we go. Well, first responders, police and fire are coming out and saying, right, over 800 fire agencies in California, along with public safety advocacy groups and law enforcement. These folks are all coming out and saying, we are against this. We don't believe in this. Here's our key points of concern. So then these people ask me, they say, well, what's going to happen? Well, do you think that the police and fire use these drones? Are they going to come take them from you? Is somebody going to come if you're flying a DJI drone and arrest you? Are we going to start putting people in jail? Like there's space and room and like, how do you enforce this? Remote ID. There's an article that came out that remote ID went into effect, but does anybody have any clue how much that's being enforced? Do we have any people who have violated remote ID? It's been in effect for however many months. Who's been violated? Who's been captured? Who's been, there's no numbers. It's just paper. It's just great on paper. It sounds safe and good and great for everybody. But with this, it's like, oh, the police officers who are pissed because they're getting their drones taken away. Were they going to come take yours away? No. The National Guard going to come in and you know, is the president, oh, go get those DJI recreational consumer drones. So that's my first point there is that, hey, by the way, the folks who police our communities are actively speaking out against this. And then, oh, point two was like, what is the federal government going to tell DJI? They have to shut their app down. They have to shut. It's all this firmware and software is in the remote. It's been said numerous times, you can fly your DJI drone without being connected to the internet. So if my DJI drone is over here right now and it's not turned on and it's not connected to the internet, how is the U.S. government or is the government going to tell DJI, hey, you know that switch that we told everyone you have and is a big concern because you can shut everyone's drone off? Yeah, we want you to flip that switch because you guys aren't allowed to fly these drones anymore. Or could somebody like, is the FCC going to like put something in the air in the waves? And when you turn your remote on, all of a sudden your 2.4 or 5.8 isn't going to talk to your drone anymore. What the hell technology is that? How in the hell is someone not, is your drone overnight not going to function? Because someone's going to tap into it when it's not turned on. That's not how these things work. So DJI is no longer going to be able to sell and import new drones into the United States. So that's how you shut down DJI. You don't give them an FCC license. And without that licensing, you cannot import your product through customs. So you use this other regulatory piece in order to prevent these vehicles from coming in. But once the vehicles, the ones that are already here, and so I'm just speaking here. I'm not advocating for anybody to do. I'm advocating for people to speak out and do anything that they think would help to kind of raise awareness and prevent this. But at the end of the day, also, it'd be like saying you can't drive a Honda anymore. And then you go out on the road and 10, 15% of the cars are Hondas and you don't even have enough cops to pull over all the Hondas and you don't have anywhere to put them all. So I don't know. I suppose it could be like medicines. Like if they're going to paint, I need to start buying up DJI drones and maybe they're going to have like a cash in day. Bring your DJI drone down to, you know, town hall and put it in the crusher and we'll give you a $50 gift certificate to, hell, I don't know, but you see what I'm saying? Like, how do you?
You're more concerned about the practicality of enforcing this rule that we're trying to be input, I guess we could say. But yeah, I definitely see what you're saying with that. It's like, yeah, you know, how many of us actually fly with DJI? And pretty much everyone I know is using a DJI product, whether they're an FPV racer, someone taking photos for real estate. It's very ingrained in our community here. It's going to be insane to try and divulge from that. I mean we can try, but we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, or it's an Autel drone gonna be banned, on a Hollystone drone. Like, just look on Amazon. Just go on Amazon. Anyone that buys a $50, $100, $200 drone on Amazon, you're not buying that's Chinese. So this isn't just DJI. This is the countering Chinese Communist Party, the countering CCP Drone Act. So the countering Chinese drones. So those $200, those inexpensive vehicles that are made and manufactured with parts and components from China, you're not going to be able to buy those. And there's not... We'll have to look it up. I'm not sure. Skydio was like one American made drone, like the blue Skydio drone. It was $1,000, $1,200. It was for the recreational prosumer and it did some neat things. Yeah. Well, they stopped making them. Skydio went and did this whole thing. And then they stopped making $1,000 drones. And now the only drone they make is $25,000-$30,000. So it's really terrible. I mean, from a commercial standpoint, it's not.
I can't imagine, though,
9-10 drones working with folks.
Well, I was just going to say, I can't imagine me like maybe 6 or 8. Time flies when I got my first drone, but I think 2017 or so. But I can't imagine having to. It was a very low entry fee, you know? You could get a very affordable drone at that time. And that's what kind of really propels people getting into it, is what's the barrier to entry, at least in my thought process.
Yep. Yeah, 100%. It's like boats too. You know, if you think about it, like you want to, you know, you like the water and you want to go out on a boat and just have a decent time. You can buy a boat for like 300, 400, 500 bucks, put a trolling motor in it. Hell, you could paddle it yourself. You don't even need a motor.
Start out with a canoe.
Then it's like, hey, I want to do this. Paddling out with the canoe, right? I'm paddling my canoe, flipping you off in your yacht, right? A little Eminem thing. It's just whenever I hear canoe, that's what I think of, like someone in a canoe, yeah, telling the person in the yacht, you know. It's just like that. There's different levels here. If you want to go tubing, you can't do it in your dinghy, you know. You got to get a little bit bigger boat. But if you just want to get started and you just want to do a little fishing and just get off the shore, you know, and that's what's being potentially removed here, because there's other products that are $6,000, $7,000, $8,000, $9,000, $10,000 that you could use. And then just to touch on it, licensing, right? So what we're also seeing, you can go on Amazon right now. There's a drone called the Cognito Spectre Air, a Cognito. Like, companies have already licensed DJI's firmware. So you can make the drone in another country and not China, and you can license. Like, DJI's workaround to continue to make money is they're just going to license their software to other manufacturers. Because at the end of the day, they're a business that wants to make money. Hey, if in the United States you can't buy drones with Chinese parts and components and hardware, well, that's fine, because we can always partner with a company that makes drones somewhere else, and we're just going to sell them our software, and they can brand the software however they want. And that's literally what's happening. this has opened the door not for more American companies to become competitive, but again, it's opening. This is, everyone always finds an opportunity, and there's always something here and something there, and someone that's always willing to find that whatever that thing is and work around it. So power to the people, you know, however it is, you know, folks are going to continue to get drones and the industry will grow and continue to advance. It's just at what speed here in the United States will it advance? I said, kind of, it's like a divorce, you know, mom and dad and, you know, the kids, someone's telling the kids what they shouldn't use. Well, this is what's best for you. And this is what's best for you. But meanwhile, the whole rest of the world is like completely fine with either mom or dad. So it's like they're telling you that one or the other is bad, but you go to any other country, they're not banning it. It's going to fly here and fly there and it'll be neat. Well, we'll certainly have a lot to unpack in the time between now and then, where there's going to be just consistent developments.
Well, like the drone light shows, I think this will reoccur again. I think this is going to be an ongoing topic, one of those long-term pieces. So we'll definitely be circling
and,
back.
And
to
so
it.
To transition the last topic and bring this video up, because we're coming, you know, up on time here, is think of light show drones. If you're a company who purchased light show drones from China, you know, are you going to be able to operate that drone in the United States? And I don't know. I think Korea and some other countries have manufactured these things. So it's maybe one or two people might get, you know, legally impacted, but I don't know. So what we're seeing here is we're coming into the end of the episode. Samuel brought this up because Samuel is just constantly solicited all day with drone light show videos. What are we looking at here, Samuel?
We have a D-Day presentation of kind of an amalgamation of drones presenting a light show. It's actually really cool to be watching. We have a few different formations. One was a plane coming in, a battleship, all these different images coming together via drone over a rather large body of water. This whole plane is actually moving. A really cool animation, not just 2D, but 3D elements in play here. I believe, where is this?
Yeah.
I was going to go ahead.
Portsmouth, UK. Yeah. United Kingdom.
Huh. But yeah, it's a lot of drone shows are popping
June
up lately,
5th.
So at least in my feed. So I thought this was one that kind of stood out just with the whole remembrance of D-Day. And they're doing a very tasteful presentation of it too.
Yeah, there's a lot of movement on that the first video. I think it's a Mustang, but
yeah, it looked like
props are rotating and the plane's moving.
Yeah,
that's insane.
Yeah, you have the actual prop rotating. The aircraft is rolling, and even this the one of the parachutists there was
very nice as well.
You can see that's a 3D parachute. I didn't catch that at first.
That's so, yeah.
That's wild.
And, I think the battleship's moving too.
Mm-hmm. And then you mentioned too how the water there. So for folks that are tuning in, watching, seeing it, you see the water, folks visually. What it is all these drones that are performing are hovering over the water. So for the entire time of the light show, if one of these drones were to kind of like fail, have a battery failure, a motor failure, you know, it's the risk to individuals, people, and property on the ground is extremely low because the vehicle, barring a significant, you know, fly away in any one direction, north, south, or east, west, that vehicle is going to go down in the water. So probably pretty scary, right? I mean, you know, definitely not this company's first light show here, but, you know, hundreds of drones. I mean, this has to be hundreds of drones, and each drone's say $1,000. So you over $100,000 of equipment, fully autonomous, hovering over the water. you know, could you imagine like someone hit like, you know, disarm like all drones and they
gone.
But again, when you're doing these complex operations, it's about mitigating risk. And by having these shows over water and areas where no one is, you're probably always going to get that approval from the FAA. But super neat, super great way to commemorate D-Day, especially with the fact of like, can you imagine having participated in D-Day and then to now still be alive and to like see this technology unfold and display this? Like that would that, what a lifetime.
It truly feels next generation. I think we can open up.
It's got to be cool. It's got to be cool to know that your life has spanned from like that. But then the crappy thing is to then see how we're like circling back to just the same similar, you know, political issues. So politics, geopolitics, and, you know, technology changes, but people, countries, cultures, you know, tend to stay the same.
I'd like to note something. Next time they do the D-Day drone light show, if they ever do it again, they should definitely have some extra drones around the guns of the ship. And like one really bright red one, just like shooting the gun at some point while they're flying. That'd look sick. Like make an explosion around it.
And then just to have like a line that isn't lit up. So you'd have a really long line and then you would just have it be like, so it would kind of look like it's moving. Like they've done. Like
separate them a little bit, make them look like individual bullets.
Like they've done with Formula Racing, they will literally line the track with drones hovering, and then they play right the colors, and it activates. So the color's moving from one drone to the next, and it gives this appearance of, you know, like the drone itself is moving. So yeah, it's pretty cool. Well, awesome episode today, as always. Diving into. Right. We started out here real environmental with the General Sherman tree, talked about the Sequoia National Forest. That was a really neat topic. Check it out. Article on dronelife.com, the video that we were watching. It's a neat video. We talked about the Skynet drone defense, you know, shotgun shells. I don't know. Definitely not buying a case of 100,000, but if you got space and time and stuff, I don't know, check it out. don't be a victim, as they would say. That's hilarious. So, and then we talked about the, you know, the FLIR, Teledyne FLIR Hadron 640, that thermal sensor, and how folks are really integrating payload into their drones in order to provide, you know, a really advanced flying system that also has the advanced thermal and visual capabilities that FLIR has always been good at providing. Jumped into the first responders, opposed the Countering CCP Act, and just kind of touched on other things. You can probably understand where I'm at on that topic. And again, we will continue to unpack this as it moves forward. But yes, as people have reached out to me, it does seem like as each day goes by, we are moving closer towards this DJI ban. I know they're running crazy sales right now. So that's the other reason people reach out. Should I buy one? Yes. If you're a fan of DJI and you want to have quality DJI product to fly in the coming years, you should be purchasing a DJI drone. You know, if that's the position you're in. And then finally we wrapped up. We talked about the D-Day drone light show, because it would not be a weekly Wings episode without light shows being discussed. So really appreciate everybody joining. You know, nothing right off the top upcoming to mention. We appreciate everybody for tuning in, listening. You know, please engage social media, reach out, email, ask questions, comments on the YouTube. You can email Miriam, IRIAM, @dronelife.com. You can also email Paul rossi@910drones.com. Any questions you have. Terry, Samuel, appreciate both of you. Insights, inputs, questions, and you know, stay safe. Look forward to seeing you both on the next episode.
We'll be here next week.